back of the page also is something interesting.
Okay, very good. So today, hey, tzaddik, let's start.
Zog der Heilige Mishnah.
Misha yana sushte nashim, umachara tzaddik. A person is married to two women. He sells a field. One of the two women writes to the buyer of the field, katvari shanada lokea, dinu devarim ein li'imach. I will not challenge your purchase of this field, and I will not, in other words, take you to court to collect it for my ketuvah. Then the Gemara is going to ask how this works, because apparently earlier, remember, we had seen that it doesn't help to say dinu devarim, because it's not a matana, but we'll speak about it in the Gemara. So now, what happens is that if it comes time to collect the ketuvah, the husband dies, so she indeed cannot collect from the person that she said she won't take to court. But the other wife, who had never written such a thing, her she'ibud was obviously unaffected. She goes ahead now, and she collects from the buyer. Okay. Now that the second wife is holding this field, the first wife comes along and says, how interesting. That field I have a pre-existing lien on. Now, of course, a while ago it was in the hands of Mr. Plony. I couldn't take him to court because I promised I wouldn't. But I never gave up on the sheba that I had on this field. And my sheba came first because I was married first and my ketuba was dated earlier. So I'll take that if you don't mind. So she takes it from the second one. So now the Rishona takes it min hashnia. The buyer says, wow, looky, looky. There is the very field that she promised she would never take away from me. Now, if I walk in, she can't take me out because I have a contract that says I will not sue you over the ownership of this field. So he says, thank you so much for this field. Of course, then the second one comes along and says, oh, looky, looky, here's that field that I had a lien on. She takes it away from the first one. And so we should have, yeah, from the locale. So we should have a little music going on as we play musical chairs. And because of this locale, minari shana, the chazrot chalila, we keep going round and round the table. When we reach a situation like this, we tell them, look, ladies and gents, go compromise on some level, because there's no way that we can arbitrarily stop the musical chairs here. The same thing would be true of a Baal Chov. Everyone's going to ask what that's supposed to mean. The Chen Isha Baalat Chov, which the Gemara, of course, will also say. Very weird statement. Says the Gemara, first of all, how does it work? What's the mechanism? A woman writes, I will not sue you. I thought we said before that that's a useless thing to write. It's just a promise. A promise doesn't mean anything. Who cares if she did write that? Dinu devarim ein li al sadezo, or ein li esikba, or yadai mesuleket himena. It's a meaningless statement. I mean, is that a statement of efker? Is that a statement of matana? It's a promise I won't sue you. So go promise from today to tomorrow. I change my mind. It's talking about over here. We said earlier, remember, that in a case where kanumi yada was machlokas, we said on one side, was that it was Migufa Shokarka, that the bit over here wasn't the actual rights to be Tairif, she gave away. This is okay, or this is, yeah. Says the Gemara, but there's another problem over here. The other problem is that a woman who signs off on a field can always turn around and say, do you understand the kind of pressure I was under? You take seriously the fact that I wrote, my husband goes ahead, sells a field, and then he says to me, look, we got a great deal, but the guy's not going to go through with the buy unless you promise that you don't take the field away from him in the event of collecting your ketuvah. And if you don't, you can forget about Hawaii next year, and so on and so forth. But it gets worse and worse, obviously. So you can't hold a woman to her promise in this kind of case. Tema, she could always say, Nachad ruach asiti labali. I had no choice but to do what my husband wanted over here, but I figured everybody understands that's an umdana, that a signature like that from a woman is obviously under duress. Milot na. Does it not say beferish in the Mishnah in Gittin, that lakach min ha'ish, a man who buys a field from another fellow, and then he goes over to the wife of that fellow, and he says, look, I don't want to buy this unless you sign, because, you know, you've got the rights of collection over here. And v'chazav lakach min ha'isha, the mekach is batel. The whole thing is batel. Now, Rashi points out that batel is mash, but it's batel completely. And the sale is not a sale. Not like we're asking over here, let her say afterwards that at least the guy will leave. And the case over there was that we said it's talking about a field that was specifically mortgaged for the ketuvah, or was a field that she had brought in her own property as part of the ketuvah. That's not what we're talking about over here. Here we're talking about the overall shibud. We don't say the mekach is batel, but the shibud. The lack of achrayus, the promise. Okay, so in this case, Alma, why would it be batel? She signed. Alma yecholai shetoma nachat ragas itil ba'alis. You see clearly for the Mishnah in Gittin, a woman always has that option. In which case, what is the Gemara saying? That konu miyada. Konu miyada is meaningless. Amrei bizer amrei b'chista, it's true, but there is a machlokes tanoim. And therefore, what we can say is that the mission, one mission is going alibi Rabbi Meir, and one mission is going alibi Rabbi Yehuda. What is that machloket? The time. Katav l'rishon v'lo chatmala. A husband sells now to a particular man on one field that he said she refuses to sign, and she will not sign off on it. And now he goes ahead, and on another field, he sells, and he asks her to sign, and she does sign. So, la sheni v'chatmalo. Says Rabbi Meir, that's it. She just really ruined herself. Ibda ktubata, she loses her ktuva. Unless, of course, there's other fields that were never sold. Because she can't collect from the first guy. Why? Because the first guy says, wait. I was the first one to buy a field. When I bought the field, there were other fields in there. The din is that a lien moves over to the next field down. So what's the problem? Did I hurt you in any way? The lien is on the next field. She goes to collect the next field. The guy says, you promised me you're not going to collect. She comes back to the first guy. The first guy says, but you can't come back to me because you're an idiot. Who told you to sign? I left you a perfectly kosher field to collect. Leave me alone. So here she's really up the creek without a paddle because she has no right to collect from number two because of her own commitment not to collect from number two. No right to collect from number one because at the time the number one was sold, the lien had moved over to number two. Because the lien is always first out, last toruf. Over here, the first out still had other fields left to collect for the ketuvah, so the lien moves over to the other field. You can't arbitrarily decide to actualize a lien against a field that someone had bought when there was another field available for you. So says Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. There's an out over here that she's got. Because the fact that she's signed off doesn't mean anything. Yecholahi shetomar nachadurach asiti labali atem malachem alai. Leave me alone. What? You're telling me I signed off? You think I signed off? You realize what my husband was putting me through? Again, I wasn't Gedai. I was going to ruin my marriage over this. I failed to explain to the court. So you see, indeed, there's a machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir about whether it is true that a woman could say, nachat ruach asiti levavli. Nope, if that's the case, then that would explain, I'll just finish this, the idea, that would explain the contradiction that we have over here between the two Mishnayot. In our Mishnah, it says that she can't taina nachat ruach asiti levavli, and that actually she did sign off, despite the fact that she clearly now is going to be in a pickle. Doesn't help. Konu miyada is sufficient. In the Mishnah in Gittin, Rebbe just got finished saying that the halacha is that she can say nachat ruach asiti levavli. So therefore, we know, if we look at the Braita, that this is a machloket. Apparently one Mishnah was going like Rebbe Meir, and one Mishnah is going like Rebbe Yehuda. Rabbi Meir didn't come up with this option of nachat ruach asiti levavli, so he's the author of our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda says there is such a thing, he's the author of the Mishnah Gittin. Except for one minor thing. Now, what happened to Rebbe's mind in between? I mean, I understand, between Ksuvus and Gittin, he completely changed his psak, and he left the Stam Mishnah, one Stam Mishnah assuming Rabbi Meir, that she cannot tie in a nachat ruach. The other star Mishnah Gittin that she can. Well, how could, what kind of answer is that? You told me that Rebbe wrote a contradiction in the Mishnah. Yes.
Is this onus?
Yes. Yeah. Basically, that's what she's saying. It's the psychological pressure.
It's not gentle pressure. It's onus, hard pressure.
It's, well, it's the equivalent of an undana that it wasn't meant. It's not. In other words, we recognize that the pressure is sufficient for her to write it without meaning. Let's say she had gone and told the Aiden before, which is called a moda, and she said, look, guys, I'm going to be signing the shtar, but I'm telling you right up front that I got no choice in the matter. Now, that doesn't mean ones in a sense that would potter her from doing an avera or anything like that, but it's the equivalent of a moda'ah. When witnesses see something, over here they're being made in a kinyan, where it shouts out, even on the face of it, that this poor woman is really under pressure, then it's as if they can't be made on it. So it's like the equivalent of a moda'ah, except it's an umdana. It's taken for granted. That's the way we estimate the situation. So, says the Gemara, that's really very cute, but what about Rebbe? Rebbe satam lahachik, Rebbe meir, v'satam lahatam, does that make sense? That in the Mishnah and Ksuvos, Rebbe says stam, halacha Rebbe meir. In the Mishnah and Gittin, he says stam, halacha is like Rebbe Yudah, that she could say nachat ruach atzid levali. Therefore, Amar of Papa, it's talking about in our Mishnah, that they got divorced. That was the point. And then she went ahead and she signed. Now over there, everybody agrees that you can't say with not some nachat ruach. We're in the middle of divorce proceedings. I ain't interested in doing any nachat ruach for that bum. So certainly can't tie a nachat ruach. I see the Ravali. Ravashi says, there's no problem. What do we have to be saying? It's talking about a divorce. Even if they're perfectly married, there's no problem. Both Mishnahs work out very well on Libra Rebbe Meir. Our Mishnah, obviously, because our Mishnah is saying if she signed off, she cannot say Nachat Ruach Asiti Levalin. And Ad Kamo Kamar Rebbe Meir Hata El B'Shnei L'Kuchot. Look, the case over there that we brought the sheet of Rebbe Meir, that's talking about where she refused to sign on the first. And then she went ahead and signed on the second. So on that basis, we came to the conclusion, oh, apparently Rebbe Meir holds a woman can't say it was under duress. Obviously, can't say she was under duress. We tell her, lady, just last month, you told your husband to drop dead when he tried to do this. And you absolutely refused to sell. So now he turns around and tells us all of a sudden everything is lovey-dovey. You know perfectly well how to assert yourself when you need to assert yourself. So therefore, we don't believe you. But in a case where there we didn't have the tulukuchot, the Rebbe Meir would also agree that, of course, she can say, like Rebbe Yudah said, nachat ruach asiti levali. So what? There's no contradiction at all. So adkan lo kamar Rebbe Meir hata elish b'shnei lukuchot. The amrila, the court says to her, iita the nachat ruach avadet, if you're so into taking good care of your husband's pressure, how come you didn't sign the first time? But in a case belokeach echad, see, Rebbe Meir is made that in lokeach echad, of course, the dinner she could say nachat ruach asiti lebali, and therefore there's no contradiction. And what we'll have to say is that matitin the katav leachen. It's talking about over here, therefore, where there had been someone else, the husband had done this, somebody else, and she had refused. And now she suddenly signs? No, if that's the case. And the sale didn't go through. The guy refused to buy. So if that's the case over here, what's she going to say? I suddenly became a good wife? She obviously doesn't care about that. So there even Rebbe Meir is made then. Now, the halacha, yeah. Okay, but it's no problem. The Rebbe will often give you hints. That's called an ukimta. Ukimta is always unusual cases. As long as you have a brain and you're forced into a corner, one of the tricks that Rebbe used to put additional information, remember the whole idea of Torah Shabbat Peh is information density. So as long as you are able to process it in a way that pulls out the information, then that's the chiyuv to write it that way. Correct? So if I force you to recognize, the only explanation is that instead of talking out, And like a fishmonger, Rebbe put it in a way that you'll figure out yourself that a psak, like Rebbe Meir, is different depending on the circumstance. Beautiful. Now, the halacha is, Tanan Hasan, we know that it says Beferish in Gittin, also in the Mishnah, that Ein Nifraim Nechasim Shubadim, Bimokom Shigesh Nechasim B'nei Chori. Afilu Ein Ziburi. This is, all of us know this very well. Where you have left a field to collect from, you cannot go ahead and say, ah, but that field that you bought, I was going to collect from that field because I had a right to collect from Benedict, or I had a right to collect from Edith because I was a Nizik. So you were supposed to pay me your best property. Then, you know, good thing you went ahead and you sold it to this guy. I'm going to take it away from this guy and then you settle with it. This guy can say to you, you can't take this property from me. When I bought this property, I made certain that there were other fields left for you to collect from. So the lien moved over to those fields. So you're going to say, yeah, but that's not fair because this property is more difficult for me to sell and translate into cash. For that, you cannot go ahead and exercise a lien to take it away from a buyer. So that's part of the protection that we put into place. As long as you don't have to sit around analyzing the values of the property, how easy it is to get rid of property, you buy a piece of land. You all you have to do is make certain, go to a title company, and you find out how many pieces of property this guy has, how many loans he has against it, and then you see, it's no problem. Even if afterwards he takes out $1 million loan, I'm free because I bought it before. And all the loans that exist up until this point, there's plenty of other properties to collect from. So I'm completely clear. Nobody can ever take it from me, right? So therefore, even if the guy comes out with a tiny, I want to take it from you because this is an easier piece of property to sell, it's edit, you can't do that. Our question is like this. How about if the property that was left behind in your mind that the person could collect it from, how about if something happened to it? How about if it was flooded? Now it no longer covers the debts of this guy. So now people are coming to you and they're saying, look, we're really sorry, but the loan existed before you bought the property. Yeah, but there was a field. I only bought it on that. Yeah, but I'm sorry, that field is no longer worth anything. So we're going to have to come and take away your piece of property. You go and settle it. The guy gave you title insurance. You go and settle it with the insurance company. So that's the question. Ishtad of Bnei Chor, Ma, what about if the property that had been left free and clear was flooded? Ishtad of literally is a word that is used to mean ruined. It's ruined. In other words, whatever it was just completely buried that field, whatever the problem was.
And if you sold the field?
No. Selling is meaningless because a lien always goes and takes away from a buyer. But suppose the field that had been left behind was not available because it isn't worth anything.
But at the time that she
could, that's the question.
Selling
doesn't matter. A lien can be exercised against selling. We're not interested in the question of whether you could get your money. We're interested in whether when you thought to get your money from field B, because field A had already been sold. Now you come to collect field B, and field B is worthless. Something happened to it. So you go now back to field A. The guy who had bought field A says, you can't come and take my field away because I left field B. So if something bad happened to field B, that's not my problem, that's your problem. Because the lien had already been transferred to field B. So here the question is that true? That the lien is transferred no matter what happens? Or is just saying the order of collection of the lien has changed? First you go to B, but then you can go back to A. So what would be the din? Can you go back to A and take it away from him? Says the Gemara, what do you mean? This is exactly what we were just talking about. Exactly. She goes ahead, the husband goes and sells a field, right? So he wants his wife to sign off on the field. She refuses to sign off the field. There's now a field that was left behind. The field that was left behind was the one that she was going to collect her kluva from, and Mr. A purchases his field A by thinking, okay, there's always field B, Why would anybody come back to me? Now what happens is that the field becomes legally flooded. It can't be collected. Why can't it be collected? Because she went ahead and signed a contract that it can't be collected, right? But the bottom line is, she can't collect. So now the question is, can she go back to A? That was your question. It says over here that if she signed to number two, then she loses her ketuvah. Why does she lose her ketuvah? Let her go back to number one and say, even though I was supposed to collect from number two, but that field is no longer available to me. So you see, says the Gemara, if the halacha would be that if something ruins field two, that you could always go back to field one, so why would she lose her ketuvah? It's true, nehidi ibdak ketuvata misheni. It's true she cannot collect her ketuvah from field number two. Why can't she go back to number one and collect it from him? Mirishon miyatigve. Says Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok, but that's all that it means. When it says she loses her ketuvah, all it means is she loses her ketuvah from number two. Says Rava. Well, that's a beautiful pshat, except for two minor problems. Is that last I heard the word loses means loses, not loses from. The word ibda means chada. My first problem with your little pshat is that the word ibda does not mean that. The word ibda means legamre. It's mashma legamre. Va'od, besides which, I can prove to you that your contention is wrong. Tanya, lava mina echad. He goes and borrows money from one guy. He then divides the property that he has that is worth the coverage of that loan to two different people. Machar nechasav l'shnayim. V'katav ba'achov l'alokeach sheni din udvarim ein li'imach. He writes to the second buyer, I cannot collect from you. Ein lo alokeach rishon klo. Here it says beferish. Forget about from number two. Okay, you want to argue Mishigas over here? I think it's crazy to argue that the word lost means lost number two. But here it says beferish, lost number one. Also, can't go back to Lokeach Rishon, because Mr. Number One, Mr. A, can tell him, what are you coming to me for? So now we see clearly that your forced explanations of the Braita are exactly that, forced explanations. So can we forget about your crazy pshat? Obviously. Hatam, ihu da'afsid nafshe biyadayim. This has nothing to do with our sugya. Obviously, if there's a act of God, and the field now is worthless because it's under the ocean. I mean, certainly people didn't cause rises in the ocean levels, did they? So, not that particular person. So now the field is ishtadav. Who's to say that you can't go and collect from number one? But to say because you were stupid enough to sign off on your rights, so now you can come back to number one and say, well, I'm really sorry, but I can't collect from field number two. Really? Yes, it was ishtadav. How exactly was it ishtadav? Well, I signed a contract that I won't collect from it. So because of your stupid contract, I'm going to lose my money? Get out of here. You want to sign the contract? So then you basically signed away your rights to collection. From my point of view, I left you a field to collect from. You don't want to collect. You're a very nice person not to collect, but certainly don't come around and blame me for your problems. You got your own problems. Because he was not mafsid nafshe biyadayim, which is exactly what happened over here. Therefore, don't bring any riots, says Rava, from this whole thing. Ibda ketuvata means exactly what it says, completely. And nonetheless, it has nothing to do with the question that you were trying to bring a riot. What's the din of ishtadav? This is not a case of ishtadav. Ognalei Rav Yema, the Rav Ashi. I don't understand. Everybody knows that ishtadav is collected. There's ma'asim b'chol yom. Let me give you an example of something that has come to court a million times and that is a well-established precedent. A guy takes out a mortgage. Now, Remember that there was a particular type of mortgage that we will discuss once again when we get back to Nazikin. There's a particular type of mortgage where the payment of the mortgage is the right to keep the production of the mortgage field for a certain number of years. So you say, I'm borrowing now against the value of this field, $100,000. The produce of this field is worth $10,000 a year. At the end of the 10 years, I'm going to take the field back free and clear because you've been using it all. There's no question whether it's interest if the guy was collecting more than $10,000. Okay, that's where it comes up. It's very interesting. Shilas, can you get around interest payments because the mice of this guy could produce more? Or since it's basically he's taking the risks, maybe he'll produce less. But this is a very standard kind of thing. Now, what happened over here is that at the end of 5 years, for let's say, the field stops producing completely. It was kash. Kash means that which happens very often, the trees become old, the vines become old, nothing you do is going to make them produce. So the guy comes to court with a mortgage holder, and he wants his loan. He says, I'm not going to collect my loan. I'm not getting a penny out of this field. So they write him a tirfa, right? So now he is going to be able to collect. No. So what happens over there? Torah, yeah, Lashon Torah.
Just pulling it out of somebody's hands.
Yeah, I'm going to be able to collect from another guy. So you say, let the other guy say, what do you mean? I left a field to collect from. How is this guy suddenly coming? Because he had a perfectly good mortgage. I wasn't worried about him. But Asamnani, Inudav Sidu Anafshai, what's the matter with you? And that's the equivalent case. A guy who buys a field on the basis of someone's mortgage on an agriculturally producing property is an idiot. Because he knows perfectly well that farming is a very risky business. Over here, he's relying on the farming of this field to pay back a mortgage when it's not worth anything. See, in other words, he was risking. He knew perfectly well that this mortgage is a very risky payback mortgage. And that it may well happen that the farming fails, and he's going to be left holding the bag. He shouldn't have bought that field. So if he bought it, he bought it thinking that, okay, I'll take my chances. It's a good deal. And if the guy ends up being terrified, I'll collect from the seller. So he can't tie in a, that's called, not called inachti l'cha makom. That's called being foolish. So therefore, he knows that an agricultural piece of trees that are supposed to be paying back a loan is a very risky business. Loi bar lo lemizma, he shouldn't have bought without taking that into consideration. Halacha
l'maisa. There's no right for.
There's no right. Halacha l'maisa is that ishtaduf b'nei chori, if it isn't a case of yudika mafse and afshe. Nonetheless, ishtaruf b'nei chori, tarfa mimashab. The din is that even when a person leaves you over a piece of property to collect from, and now something happens to it, you can still be on the firing line. Because bottom line is, the lien didn't disappear. The lien is there. Omar Abai, how about in a case where somebody says to a woman, I am going to give you this gift, okay? After, however, you die, they are to pass on to a friend of mine. Now, she goes ahead and she gets married. Amda v'niseit. A Baal is a lokeach. And a Baal is lokeach, and therefore in acharayich, the Mokom Baal Klum. Since now the Lokeach has not left anything over to be the Acharayach, we're going to call Acharayach Mr. Acharayach, so we can identify him, right? So Mr. Acharayach wants now the field that was promised him by his friend. He comes to collect it, We said, well, this is not the field that was promised you by a friend, because it was only promised you that when she dies, you'll be in the position of getting it. But that's only if she had it. When she died, she didn't own this field anymore. She sold it. And therefore, you are left with the unfortunate position of being a Mr. Acharayach when there was no Acharayach. Kiman ki haitana. This is going according to Shimon ben Amaliah, the Tana. Nichasai lech v'acharayach liploni. A guy promises a woman that here's money for you, here's a property for you, but after you die, it goes to so-and-so. Yorad harishon umachar. Suppose now we go ahead and sell to somebody, so the Baal now sells it. Hasheni motzi mi'al ha-kuchot. You can go ahead and collect. Divrei Rebbe. But Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, nope. If the first person sells, then ein l'sheni ela ma sheshiyeh rishon. If there was nothing left, there's nothing left. Says
the money that he paid for the field?
Who, the, no. The buyer is fine. The buyer's got no problem. But the guy, Mr. Acharayach, who's been trusting his whole life to this great gift that he's going to get after he knocks off, after she unfortunately dies. And in this case, she dies, and there's nothing there for him to collect. He thought that even though she sold, says Rebbe, oh yes, he does have. He can collect. It says Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, nope. There's no acharayach in this case. So Abaya is saying, any time a woman gets married, the husband is a lokeach. Because that's the din. Baal is basically takes over the property of his wife. And therefore, there's no acharayach. So I'm passing Rav Shimon Gamliel. So what do you mean he's passing Rav Shimon Gamliel? Abaya hates this idea of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Miomer Abaya, what? Abaya is saying that it's okay for her to sell. And then, the poor buyer is up the creek without a paddle, or the poor acharayach, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, is up the creek without a paddle. But I thought Abaya said, Amar Abaya, Ezeu Rasha Aron, who is considered to be a vicious Rasha, somebody, Ezeu Mesi Eitzalim Korban Achasim, Rav Shimon Gamliel, guy's got a friend, somebody gave this friend a gift, and told him, after you die, it's going to go to somebody else. This friend needs money. So you tell your friend, what's the problem? Sell the field. I'm going to sell the field. I mean, the field isn't mine to sell. It was given to me to use in my lifetime. Then it goes to somebody else. That's because you don't know Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, you can sell that field, and then there won't be anything left for the acharayach after your lifetime. So why not enjoy the field now and take that trip to Hawaii? Somebody who gives someone an answer like that is a Russia. Because Lamaisa, the intent of the person giving it was that it should be acharayach. And what you did is, you used the small print, basically, to maneuver acharayach out of his field, and the giver out of his intent. So how come Abaya says over here that she could sell? Says the Gemara. The din over there is that Abaya says it's a terrible thing to do, but he doesn't say it can't be done. In this case, Mikama Tina say. Abaya says, let her go and get married. Abaya says, let her go and get married. You're right. Let her go and get married is a vicious thing to do, because then the Baal becomes a lokeach. But all he said was, Nisik. If Lamaisa, she went ahead and got married, then the halach is like Rishon Gamliel. That's all that he said.
It even makes a sense on the other one. Others. It's a Rosh, because it changed it. According, if you wouldn't pass it like that, he wouldn't have done anything. It wouldn't be a Rosh, because it would go back.
That's right.
So,
yeah, but he was relying on Shimon Gamliel. The Omar Abaya, another mimer that Abaya said, which is fascinating. If somebody gives it, in the case of the Chasai Lech, the Acharayach Leploni, and she sells, and then she dies, so now her husband is able, as the Yoresh, to be motzi miyad alekuchot. So the husband takes it away from the buyer. So now it's back. So Mr. Acharayach comes along and says, sir, that field was meant to be left to me after your wife died. Now obviously over here something's wrong, because We just got finished saying that a Baal is a lokeh. So what's an afkamina between the Baal being the lokeh for Moch or La'achir? I don't understand. If the Baal is a lokeh, so then already you can't say, sir, it goes to me. I'm Mr. Achariah. This thing Gemara will explain in a moment how this case is different. But I mean, if we think about it, it's obvious. The previous case is talking about where she wasn't married. She went and got married. So then the Baal is a lokeh. But if somebody does this to a woman who is married, then obviously by saying acharayah, it's the equivalent of saying, I'm giving this to you on condition that your husband has no rights to it. Because otherwise there won't be an acharayah. Now, look, is if you give a woman property, the Baal can't exercise his rights to take it, because then the whole gift is bottled. If the gift is bottled, then the Baal can't take it, so then the woman gets it, and so on. So that basically achieves that the Baal doesn't have it. That's going to be what we explain in the second case. She was already married. Okay, but the Gemara will get to that explanation. Let's not worry about that part. So comes along now, the Acharayach takes it from the Baal. But the Lokeach comes along, because he holds now that the original Mechir is a good Mechir, like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So Lokeach says, what's the problem? The problem is, there's Mr. Acharayach. Mr. Acharayach don't matter to me, because we hold like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. There is no Acharayach. I'm the buyer. So then what happens? The husband comes along now and took it from Acharayach. The Acharayach comes along and takes it away from the husband. The buyer now could take it from Acharayach. Now, it sounds like it's going to go round and round. But it doesn't. The Gemara's going to ask why it doesn't. But in this case, it stops. The musical chairs stop in the hands of the lokeach. So the buyer has the last say. Wait, what happened to musical chairs? In the Mishnah, this case produces a situation in which everybody keeps taking from everybody until they're forced into it. It's basically enforced arbitration. Because nobody's going to get anything if Lamaisa, every time somebody gets something, someone else is going to sue him. So therefore, the court enforces an arbitration agreement, right? Here it says, no, we give it to Lokeach. Why does it go round and round? Until they reach some kind of suitable compromise. So that's an obvious difference. The difference is that hatam itlu pseda lekulo. In the case in our Mishnah, everybody is losing. No matter who is going to end up paskening like, somebody else is going to end up losing their money. Either the woman with her ksuva, or the second woman, or the lokeach. Somebody's losing money here. So where somebody's losing money, it's only fair that they arbitrate it and have at least a compromise that we're not going to hurt that particular person. Over here, there's only one person losing money. And that's the buyer. The only person who put money out for this thing is me. And you guys got a gift. I was the one who was basically being screwed over. I was the one that was sold the property. Now we're into the musical chairs. You're telling me, let's have some compromise. Why should we have compromise? You guys lost nothing and I lost everything. Therefore, this is another one of these situations which we've already seen in the parak a few times, where, and you'll notice that this is the theme of the parak. Basically, the theme of the parak is where the legalities create an impossible situation and where we therefore go into a meta legality in which we say is bottom line, this is the correct thing to do. So whether it's in terms of Shuda the Dayani, or if it's in terms of Chalukah, or it's an enforced arbitration, or it's a recognition that, as Rava keeps tying back to Rami Bar Chama, it's ridiculous to say that a person could put somebody in a position where by the very virtue of his having sold, he can now take the guy's money. All of these type of things are made of legalities, right? Reading the small print, yes, you're right. But in terms of justice, you're wrong. You can't come with two hats and be both a Toref and a Yorish. So that's how we started, whether the Ksuva Sheni is considered to be the most of a Chavarata. Starting from there, the rest of the parak follows with exactly those type of issues. People wearing two hats that causes somebody a hefset. People making a deal in which all of a sudden they change their hat in the middle, in which now he becomes his mother to demand the ksuba that the mother never, and so on and so forth. One case after another in which the court will look at it from a position of, but looking at it from above, in the perspective, what is correct to do. So in this case, this is what's correct to do. Even though you're right, technically speaking, we ought to be playing musical chairs. There's got to be a bottom line to musical chairs. And therefore, Chazal were koveya to give it over into the hands of the lokeach. So Mashal Hasam answers the Gemara, Hatami to Pseida Lekulo. The case in our Mishnah with Chozot Chalila is everybody loses. And therefore, we need to compromise. But also Lokeach would eat like Pseida. The only guy who loses, really, is the Lokeach. Therefore, we'll be making it be under the Lokeach. Also, Raphram, Omar Lashmaitata Kameda Ravashi. So Raphram went ahead and said this over to Ravashi. And he asked him this last piece of Abaya. He asked him, does this really make sense that Abaya would have said this? Ni Omar Abaya Hachi? I thought Abaya said in the previous case, this was the question that I already spoke out to you, the confusion between the earlier case in which Abaya said the Baal is a Lokeach, and this case where we're saying the Baal himself is not a Lokeach and he's going to be Terev from the Lokeach as a Yorish. Didn't Abaya say that in a case where a man says to a woman, that if she's Amdav and Nisait, that the Baal is a Lokeach? And in that case, the Acharayach cannot take away from the Baal. Aim the Acharayach b'makom Baal klum. And over here you're saying, no, actually Mr. Acharayach could take it from the Baal, and then the Lokeach takes it from Acharayach. What happened? What's the matter with you? It's two different cases. Well, it's talking about she went and got married. Well, that means at the time that he gave it her, she wasn't married. If she wasn't married, there's no problem. Then she goes to get married, so a Baal is a Lokeach. But if a man says this to a woman who's already married, and he's insisting that there should be an Acharayach, so what is he telling you? He's telling you, I don't want your husband to get his filthy paws into my gift. And therefore it turns out to be, when he tells Acharayach, he's saying, Acharayach likne Baal lo likne. I'm giving you this gift on condition that it's not meant for your husband. In that case, he certainly could prevent the husband from getting rights to it. But what's the meaning of that closing line? V'chein ba'al chov. What's a v'chein ba'al chov? Tana, v'chein ba'al chov u'shnei lekuchot. No, it means take a case and substitute for the word in our Mishnah, a wife, coming now to be tofes or ksuva, from two buyers, and instead now put in ba'al chov. A Baal Chov where there were two Lekuchot. So in this case we have now, Shimon owes Reuven, let's say, $1,000, okay? So now he's got, Shimon, two fields worth $500 apiece. So basically the lien is against the entire thing. Now he goes ahead and asks, the guy that says, I'm not going to buy your field. Why would I buy your field? I know that somebody's got a lien against it. So what happens is that he gets him, he comes to the lender, and he says, do me a favor, I really need to sell this field. There's another field. Why don't you sign off? No, absolutely not. Why would I sign off? I get a lien on both of these fields. Refuses to sign off. Okay. But the guy ends up buying the field. Now he has a second buyer. And just as in the case of the Mishnah, the woman signs off on the second buyer. In this case, the Baal Chov signs off now on the second buyer, right? So in this case, the Baal Chov will certainly come back to collect from the first guy because he can't say, Inakti lechom makom ligvot, because the two fields together were worth the full value of the loan, but not individually. So in such a case, the Lokeach Rishon now is going to go ahead and he's going to go back to the second guy. And the Baal Chov will now come and collect the second field from the first one who was goveit for the achrayas of his field. And we end up with a Chozor Chalila again, correct? So we have exactly the same thing, unless they make a pshara. So the Mishnah is simply giving you another case where we recreate with a Baal Chov the musical chair situation. Obviously, it's slightly different from the Ksuva. A Ksuva, everything is b'shuvah, and the problem over there was that the Hinakti Lech Makom Ligvot. The case of a Baal Chov is talking about where he needed both of the fields and was mevater on one of them. Okay? The same thing would be true. V'chein, the next piece of the Mishnah that said Baalat Chov, is also talking about an Isha who is a Baalat Chov. In other words, she has now against her husband the Chov of her Ktuva, which was enough to collect two fields. He goes ahead and he sells now the first field. She doesn't sign off. And now the second one, she does sign off. Over there, she can go to the first one, obviously, and collect. But now the first one is going to go and collect from the second one. So then the woman's going to come and say, oh, that's nice. I only promised the second guy, but I could certainly collect this field. Then the second guy comes, takes it from the woman, and said, you promised me never to make me problems on this. This is a field that was owed me. I paid good money for it. This fellow went out and collected it, and now all I have is a promise for repayment against your husband's non-existent property. So Mimela, it goes round and round again. So therefore, the Mishnah is simply providing three cases of Chozrim Chalila. One, which was essentially an ishtadif because of her sign-off, but it wasn't originally valued. And that leads into the question of whether she could taina that I never meant to sign off. The other, which is a completely different issue, it's owed, Lamaisa. Both fields were owed, one of which he signs off on. And now the question is, after he collects his achrayas from the second guy, can she collect from him? Yes. Keeps going round and round, and dear too, we would need a pshara. So we have three cases of pshara in one Mishnah. Hadron alav misha yana sui.
Li neder fantun de heilige peri.
Almana nizonet minichse yitomim. And ma'ase yadeh shalahem. The woman who now her husband died, remember that one of the tnaya ktuvah is that she can continue to live in the house and be mefuneset from the house until such time as she goes ahead and gets married, where we said tovat ktuvata. More details to come.